Oddly, the man's face was now only a couple of feet away. He seemed in one way to be a perfectly normal shape, but his body was sitting cross-legged on a pole 40 feet away, while his face was only 2 feet from Arthur's. Without moving his head, and without seeming to do anything odd at all, he stood up and stepped onto the top of another pole. Either it was just the heat, thought Arthur, or space was a different shape for him. "A beach house," he said, "doesn't even have to be on the beach, though the best ones are. We all like to congregate," he said, "at boundary conditions." "Really?" said Arthur. "Where land meets water, where earth meets air, where body meets mind, where space meets time. We like to be on one side and look at the other." Arthur got terribly excited. This was exactly the sort of thing he'd been promised in the brochure. He was a man who seemed to be moving through some kind of Escher space, saying really profound things about all sorts of stuff. It was unnerving, though. The man was now stepping from pole to ground, from ground to pole, from pole to pole, from pole to horizon and back. He was making complete nonsense of Arthur's spatial universe. "Please stop," Arthur said suddenly.
"Can't take it, huh?" said the man.
Without the slightest movement, he was now back, sitting cross-legged on top of the pole 40 feet in front of Arthur.
"You come to me for advice, but you can't cope with anything you don't recognize. So we'll have to tell you something you already know, but make it sound like news, eh? Well, business as usual, I suppose." He sighed and squinted mournfully into the distance. "Where are you from, boy?" he then said.
Arthur decided to be clever. He was fed up with being mistaken for a complete idiot by everyone he ever met.
"Tell you what," he said. "You're a seer. Why don't you tell me?"
The old man sighed again. "I was just," he said, passing his hand round behind his head, "making conversation." When he brought his hand round to the front again, he had a globe of the earth spinning on his up-pointed forefinger. It was unmistakable. He put it away again. Arthur was stunned.
"How did you—"
"I can't tell you."
"Why not? I've come all this way."
"You cannot see what I see, because you see what you see. You cannot know what I know, because you know what you know. What I see and what I know cannot be added to what you see and what you know, because they are not of the same kind. Neither can it replace what you see and what you know, because that would be to replace you yourself."
"Hang on, can I write this down?" said Arthur, excitedly fumbling in his pocket for a pencil.
"You can pick up a copy at the spaceport," said the old man. "They've got racks of the stuff."
"Oh," said Arthur, disappointed. "Well, isn't there anything that's perhaps a bit more specific to me?"
"Everything you see or hear or experience in any way at all is specific to you. You create a universe by perceiving it, so everything in the universe you perceive is specific to you."
Arthur looked at him doubtfully.
"Can I get that at the spaceport too?" he said.
"Check it out," said the old man.
It says in the brochure," said Arthur, pulling it out of his pocket and looking at it again, "that I can have a special prayer individually tailored to me and my special needs."
"Oh, all right," said the old man. "Here's a prayer for you. Got a pencil?"
"Yes," said Arthur.
"It goes like this. Let me see now. Protect me from knowing what I don't need to know. Protect me from even knowing that there are things to know that I don't know. Protect me from knowing that I decided not to know about the things that I decided not to know about. Amen." "That's it. It's what you pray silently inside yourself anyway, so you may as well have it out in the open."
Said Arthur. Thank you."
"There's another prayer that goes with it that's very important," continued the old man, "so you'd better jot this down, too."
Okay.
"It goes, Lord, Lord, Lord." It's best to put that bit in just in case. You can never be too sure. "Lord, Lord, Lord, protect me from the consequences of the above prayer. Amen." And that's it. Most of the trouble people get into in life comes from missing out that last part.
"Ever heard of a place called Stavromula Beta?" asked Arthur.
"No."
"Well, thank you for your help," said Arthur.
"Don't mention it," said the man on the pole, and vanished.
Chapter 10. Ford Prefect hurled himself at the door of the editor-in-chief's office, tucked himself into a tight ball as the frame splintered and gave away once again, rolled rapidly across the floor to where the smart grey crushed leather sofa was, and set up his strategic operational base behind it. That, at least, was the plan. Unfortunately, the smart grey crushed leather sofa wasn't there.
Why? Thought Ford as he twisted himself around in mid-air, lurched, dived and scuttled for cover behind Hal's desk. Do people have this stupid obsession with rearranging their office furniture every 5 minutes? Why, for instance, replace a perfectly serviceable, if rather muted, grey crushed leather sofa with what appeared to be a small tank?